You're listening to How To 20-Something, the only podcast that helps both men and women navigate their 20s and learn how to adult across all aspects of their lives. We're going to be focusing on career, relationships, finances, fitness, nutrition, and all of the common challenges and obstacles a typical 20-something will face in this post-college life and what to do about it. I'm your host, Jess Diamond, and I am the CEO and founder of Jess Diamond Coaching, where I help young professionals get their shit together, gain their confidence, and own their life. No one prepares you for this adulting world, so allow me to help you feel like you are no longer a chicken running around with its head cut off, and that you actually know what the hell is going on and what your next step to take is. Welcome to How To 20-Something. Welcome back to another episode of How To 20-Something. Today, I've brought on one of my clients, Julia, to talk about the married life and all that comes with it. We're going to highlight wedding planning with two very different families, the modern married world, the work we've done together that has an exceptional impact on her marriage, and what happens when the wedding's over. So we're going to get right into it. And per usual, I'm going to begin by introducing Julia Watkins. Julia grew up in Charleston, South Carolina, and attended the University of South Carolina for both undergrad and graduate school, where she graduated with a bachelor's in communications in 2015 and a master's in higher education and student affairs in 2018. Julia and her husband, Mac, moved to Charlotte in early 2022 after her husband received a job opportunity in the city, and soon after, she decided to switch careers and dive into real estate. She is now a residential broker slash realtor with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services and loves it. She specializes in helping first-time home buyers understand the process of building wealth through real estate and is excited to continue building relationships with new people. During her free time, she can be found exercising at Solid Core or Bar 3, chasing her dog Leo in their backyard in Cotswold, or meeting a new Charlotte resident for coffee to help get them plugged into the community. Julia is here today to discuss married life, and we'll be back with another episode to discuss the first-time home buying process in the future. Hi, Julia. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Jess. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be back.
Yeah. And I want to start with saying that I love that you wanted to come on here and talk about the wedding planning that leads into your marriage. Because your family and your husband's family have very different religious backgrounds, and that can be tricky to navigate since there are certain traditions that people include based on their religious beliefs. And that this is a very common topic and honestly experience, and it might not even be religious based, but also across cultural domains, because getting married is bringing two people with very different backgrounds together to create this new family. And that all gets highlighted with the wedding details. The big challenge with conjoining two beliefs in a wedding is you don't really want to upset some of the people that are helping pay for it, and that results in a lot of unwanted opinions coming into play. Can you take us through some of the decisions that had to be discussed in regards to this topic and how you guys came to an agreement with certain things?
Yeah, so let me just start by saying, even if you're marrying someone from the same religion as you, the same type of background as you, wedding planning in itself is so stressful because, like you said, there's just so many different opinions and families do things so differently. So it doesn't matter if you're both Christian, if you're both Jewish, if you're both Muslim, it's probably going to be tense no matter what. When there's, you know, a good bit of money involved, people are just stressed and, you know, you're on a timeline. So first and foremost, one recommendation is hire a neutral party, usually a planner, to help navigate those waters. I remember when we were hiring someone, I was like, not only are you going to help us organize this event, but like you're going to be a part-time therapist for navigating these different relationships during this time. So make sure that your wedding planner knows that there are going to be differences and they should be able to help talk you through that. So I grew up, my parents were in an interfaith marriage. They are divorced for many years, got separated when I was very young. But my mom grew up Jewish. My dad grew up Catholic. I identify mainly as Jewish. And Mac identifies as Christian. So it was tricky for us in the beginning because I wasn't super religious, but I did want some of that Jewish culture in our wedding. And I knew that I wasn't going to be comfortable getting married in a church. And Mac knew he wasn't comfortable getting married in a synagogue. So we kind of decided that we would get married outside. To me, I have always felt a spiritual connection to just in the outdoors by the water. And he agreed that that would be fine with him. And, you know, he can make that work. And so we decided on this outdoor venue, and it ended up being really funny because it actually ended up like torrential downpouring that day. So we didn't even get to have it outside, which was like the whole point of this non-denominational ceremony, whatever. But it's fine. It ended up being a lot more intimate. We ended up getting married in the lobby of our reception venue. So just also remember, anything can happen and anything goes. In Charleston, there's a lot of hurricanes and people have to switch last minute. And so as long as you're flexible, I think it's fine. The most important thing is, you know, your vows and that you're celebrating this union between you and your partner. So with that, like I said, I wanted something from the Jewish culture, Jewish religion. So for that, I had both my parents walk me down the aisle, which is like a Jewish tradition at Jewish weddings. You'll see both the mother and the father kind of escorting the bride down the aisle. And that was really, really special to me, especially because they were separated. I felt like my mom deserved to be there just as much as my dad did. And then for Mac's side, we actually had his mom read a passage from the New Testament. So that was kind of like the nod to the Christianity part as well. So we did not have a pastor or a rabbi marry us. We had a mutual family friend who, it was a family friend of mine, and actually Mac worked for her. She was a judge in Charleston that Mac interned with, and we just both respected the heck out of her and really, really looked up to her. So we thought that she was a perfect person to marry us. And that was something that was really important to us. Someone of really high moral character that be really present and listening to and would give us little tidbits of advice all along the way. So yeah, that's how we got from both.
That's all so helpful. I love that it's all this neutral ground. It was not at one religious establishment over another. It wasn't one person like conducting the wedding over another. It was all agreed upon neutral ground experiences, as well as compromises that were made that you guys both agreed with. Like it's like the compromising starts then. It's like, what are you willing to give? What is absolutely not? And it's like the absolutely not was, it's not going to be in a church. It's not going to be in a synagogue. The absolutely not is not going to be by a rabbi. It's not going to be by a pastor. But what we can do is highlight some traditions. I'll be walked down the aisle by both my parents. And then Mac's mom, I don't know why I said I, but you were walked down the aisle by both of your parents. And then Mac's mom read from the Old Testament. So it does bring it all into play in ways that makes everyone happy. I'm sure like you probably may have gotten like some voice from someone else of like, it should have been more this or it should have been more that, because everyone loves to give their two cents. But it sounds like you were really happy with it. And at the end of the day, that's what matters. It's your and Mac's special day together, celebrating the love of you two.
Yeah, and I agree. And I do think that, so it's really funny because I tell brides specifically, this is like the one time in your life where you can be super selfish. It is your wedding. The term bridezilla didn't come out of nowhere. And I'm not saying, hey, if you're a bride, you have every right to be a bridezilla. But this is the arguably the most important day of your life. So you don't want to have regrets. And I will say it does depend who is paying for your wedding. If your parents are giving you all this money to get married, then yeah, I do think they should have some say, you know? But again, it's just conflict resolution, and it's about being upfront. And if you're lucky enough to have people helping you pay for this wedding reception, tell them at the beginning what is super important to you, because we all assume, of course. And for me, my mom would get really upset and would say like, I don't feel like I've had anything like go my way, and I'm helping pay for this wedding. And actually, like, me including her and walking me down the aisle was something really intentional that I tried to do to make her feel really great. So I think, again, it's just about communication, not only communication with your partner, but communication with the folks who are financially helping you if you are lucky enough to have them.
Yeah. Communication seems to be a very common thing in every episode during my like little relationship series, but it is. It is so important. You can't establish healthy relationships or maintain them without communication. And the wedding is a lot of different brains coming together to create this special day, and it requires a lot of communication. But I want to move past wedding topics. So let's say, okay, now the wedding happens, married life begins. What, if anything, changed for the two of you?
Honestly, not much. We had been together for 8 years, and we did live together before we got married. We lived together while we were engaged, and that was really important to me because I just felt like I really needed to make sure I knew what I was signing up for before, you know, signing over this contract of marriage. I will say we were only married for 4 months and then COVID hit. So I feel very lucky because our kind of newlywed honeymoon phase was COVID. And, you know, usually right after your wedding, you really, really like each other as opposed to so many couples who unfortunately said, holy heck, what did I do? I cannot spend this much time with you. We kind of enjoyed the quarantine time, just getting that time together. We say a lot of times it felt like we were camping. I don't know why, but I think like after marriage, you know, COVID aside, I stopped trying to change my husband and I picked my battles so much more carefully. I think before you're married, you're still kind of hoping that like their flaws, maybe you can like lessen the flaws or the no one in this world is perfect. And so, you know, for an example is like Mac leaves his clothes right next to the hamper. He does not put them in the hamper. Lots of men do this. I don't understand. But
it's a very common man thing.
It is so common.
For some reason.
Yeah, I don't get it at all. But so like before we were married, I would like get so mad and just be like, send him pictures of like the clothes and be like, this is bull. Like, what are you doing? Like, act like an adult, whatever. And I think once we got married, I was like, okay, I like willingly signed up for this. And is this annoying? Yes. But is it worth this fight? No, because I need to foster and feed this healthy marriage. And so now, you know what? Every once in a while, I just put the clothes in the hamper myself and bite my tongue. And I couldn't let it drive me nuts for the rest of my life. So I think I was just like a lot more accepting with you signed up for this person and they're not perfect and they're pretty freaking awesome. So let's focus on the good rather than trying to change the things that we don't like.
Yeah. Do you guys ever feel like you're playing house? Like, obviously you're actually married and you are building this life together, but does it ever feel like, nah, we're just playing, like we're making this up as we go along, we're playing house?
I think everyone who is a young adult feels like that. Like we're all flying by the seat of our pants. No one knows what they're doing. Marriage is hard. Anyone who says it's not hard is either lying or I don't know. I just don't believe them. So it's work. And playing house, I don't know. Maybe. Sometimes we like to joke that like we're roommates, but I have a good one. I have a pretty good roommate.
Yeah, I can approve. I can attest to that. And I love that you said it is work because it is work. Relationships require work. They require effort. So how do you consciously put effort in, or how do you make sure effort is put in by both of you guys to maintain this happy and healthy marriage and not feel like you're dragging your feet every step of the way?
Yeah. So I think there's like the receiving end of this where like Mac puts an effort, and then there's the giving end of this where I put in effort. So let's back up a little bit. I already mentioned I grew up with divorced parents. They split up at a very young age. So I never witnessed that healthy, happy marriage in the home ever. Matt grew up with parents in a healthy marriage. So he wasn't quite as like obsessed with, you know, what can we do to make this marriage work? Because he saw it very natural happen at home. I was a little more insecure about like, oh my gosh, we had a fight. Is he going to leave? And he's like, oh my God, we had a fight. It's fine. Like, chill out. We'll get over it. And tomorrow will be a better day. And so I think that for me, putting in the effort, receiving the effort from Mac was that like reassurance, like, hey, I'm not going to leave. And like, hey, I love you. And like, hey, I'm still choosing you. Even when you're, you know, being annoying or ridiculous or making me mad, I'm still choosing you and I choose you every single day. For me, putting in effort, like, of course I choose him every day. But for me, I think it's more like taking things off his plate. Mac has a really stressful job. And so I think it's like, what can I do to make his load lighter? Whereas for me, I have, you know, my stuff handled in that regard. And mine's more, I guess it's like love languages a little bit, you know. What, so his is probably acts of service and mine is like small gifts, which everyone says is very materialistic, but it's not. It could just be a post-it note on the mirror saying, I love you. That's the best gift of all. So I think it's different depending on the person. Like, what does putting in effort look like for the person receiving it, similar to love language? And you know, for me, I don't necessarily enjoy putting in the effort that Mac desperately needs and wants. I don't like to cook. And that is like the best, kindest thing that I can do in my marriage to keep it going smoothly is take that off, take what's for dinner off Mac's plate. And it doesn't mean I have to cook this like lavish three-course meal by any means, but is it? Oh, do we have food at the house? Is our fridge stocked? And do we have a plan for dinner? Even if it's, oh, we're getting takeout tonight. Just me making that decision is huge. And usually they don't put up a fight. If the decision has been made, they're happy a decision has been made. And it's one less thing for them to think about.
Yeah, I want to backtrack to you talking about coming from different upbringings because you and I both come from a single mom household. And people don't think like you'll view marriage and relationships differently from someone that doesn't, but it definitely does, as you've just spoken about, of like this, the way that you've viewed fights and the versus the way that he views fights are very different because you would come from this fear of like, he's going to leave, he's going to walk out and then it's over. And a lot of people come from divorced households or mixed families and or have seen toxic marriages and didn't realize that's what it was. So we all had these honestly misconstrued ideas of what a marriage should look like and then versus what it could look like. And it's a lot of fears that are centered around our upbringings. And I know with me personally, it's a fear of the relationship failing. It's come up with my sister who is getting frustrated with the lack of commitment by her boyfriend with proposing because our dad never stayed true to his word. But it's all of these different perspectives that we have and the ways that we grew up that have formed into our views of what our marriage should be. So how can you speak a little bit more in depth of some insecurities you may have had or what you've had to work through to get past that, that you've learned along the way?
I think this is something that you helped me with in life coaching. And it was just really honestly explaining that. Like, I love when Mac and I tag team things in like the house, whether it's cooking a meal, whether it's yard work. For example, we just put up lights in our backyard this past weekend. And I wanted to tag team that because it would have moved faster and whatever. But Mac is like, no, like that's my thing. Just let me do it. Can you go do something in the house that you don't hate doing? That's your thing. And I'm like, wait, but like, we should be doing it together. Like, it's this project. Why don't you want me to help? And he just like, sometimes he's very much like, let's split up and both conquer what we do best.
Divide and conquer.
Yeah, divide and conquer. And I'm like, no, like, it'll be more fun if we're like a team. And like, and he's just like, let's not do that, please. Like, what's going to end up happening is we're both going to try and be in charge and like tell each other what to do. And then we're going to bicker. And so I think like explaining the whole team thing to him as a child of divorce, like, hey, I never saw my parents work as a team. So that's why I so desperately want to do these things together, because they would be less miserable. You know, when you have a, like, misery loves company, isn't it easier if we're both folding laundry, like chatting? And I think it's a time to connect. But in his eyes, he's like, no, let's just both divide and conquer. But I think once I explained that to him, it was like this vulnerable moment that he really, really appreciated. And now we do, I think we do tag team more, especially with dinner. Like, he never understood why I wanted to like chop the carrots and chop the vegetables while he did the meat or whatever. And it feels good to like have a finished product that we both worked on. And I never got to see that. So I think just really explaining the difference between, you know, his growing up and my growing up, my mom did everything. A lot of times she hired people to do things that she couldn't do. So even me just letting Mac help me with things, I was raised like, we don't need a man. We can do everything ourselves, which is true. We can. But how nice is it when your partner can actually help you and assist you and maybe like spot you when you're going up the stairs to the attic? It's just, I talked about this in another podcast, being like soft and feminine gets you a lot more ahead in the game than being like aggressive alpha. I can do everything on my own by myself. And it just makes the house, the energy so much better.
Yeah. And life coaching with me helped you to see not only like where all of your like mindset and everything was coming from, but also help kind of relate to where he was coming from as well. And I want to shamelessly plug in how beneficial our coaching partnership was for you, because you had insane results. So can you share some of the other tactics that I've helped you guys put in place?
Yeah, I talked about this on another podcast I went on. I love the options. The options is one of my favorite strategies that we did. When you're struggling to make a decision, I always use dinner as, or like, okay, let's say it's a vacation. Like, you and your partner know you need a weekend getaway, but that's a lot of work on one person to plan a whole weekend getaway by themselves. And what usually, I mean, I may be wrong, but what used to happen with us is we'd be like, yeah, let's plan a weekend getaway. And he'd be like, okay, yeah, like, go ahead. And I'd be like, well, wait, like, where do you want to go? And he'd be like, no, I'm fine, like, with whatever. Like, you just let me know where we're going. And I was like, well, now it's like not even special, because I don't know. And I'm insecure about my decisions. And like, what if I like put together this whole little proposal and then you don't even want to do it? Then I'm going to get frustrated. So the options, which is what you taught me, would be like, okay, we both want to go on this weekend getaway. Here are three options, and like, they can be totally insane. Like, it's basically just a way to get a conversation going and to get the other party to say something besides, I don't care, you do it. So let's say we want to go on a weekend getaway. And like, by the way, none of these options are feasible, but I would be like, okay, do you want to go to Argentina? Do you want to go to Myrtle Beach? Or do you want to go to Canada? And then he'd be like, well, I definitely don't want to go to Myrtle Beach. Like, it's the middle of winter. Why would we go there? And so then I'd be like, okay, so you want to go somewhere cold, like, and snowy. And then he'd be like, yeah, that sounds better. And so then again, and I'd be like, well, now you give me three options that are cold and snowy that maybe you'd like to go to. And so then he'd come back and he'd be like, all right, Colorado, because we definitely can't afford to go to Argentina. So he'd say Colorado, the West Virginia snowshoe, let's go skiing there, or Maine. And then I'd be like, well, I'm really not down to ski this year. And I've never been to Maine. And I really want to go somewhere that I've never been to. I'm going to look into Maine. Let's look at some hotels in Maine. And so now we have kind of sort of come to this narrowed down decision-making together. And it's all because I started a conversation and gave him three options. And then I listened to the response and figured out kind of what he wanted. And by the way, women should not be the only ones doing this. Men can do this. Your partner can do this. It should not be a one-sided street. And I think that was something that you really kind of preached, was like, Julia, you should not be the only one giving the options. Make sure that he is also giving you options every once in a while as well. And I'll say he doesn't normally give me the option. I'm normally the one who initiates the option conversation, but it's so much better than just trying to plan whether it's dinner or a vacation or anything. It's so much better than having to do it by yourself.
Yeah. And even if you have to nudge the options of like, okay, give me some options, so then it reminds him to do it. That was something that you and I talked about as well. And it is important. And I want to say, like, your initial reaction to it was, it's like he's a toddler. And I was like, no, everyone needs options. And you were able to kind of connect to that of like, oh, wait, I also like options. I don't like when everything, when there's so many options that you can't pick anything, when it's like all just a blanket statement of where do you want to go for dinner, or where do you want to go on vacation, or what chores do you want to do? It's like, no, like my brain is thinking of so many things all the time. I need it to be narrowed down for me of like top three or top two, so we can go from there. And it does. It just creates more of a limiter and like a narrow track to go from. So it's not so broad and you're not like basically paralyzed by all of the decisions that have to be made versus narrowing it down.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's another thing I would just say about life coaching in general is, like, every time we had a session, I would just take away these huge golden nuggets. And I know I'm blanking right now on so many of the other things that you and I talked about, but like, they're in my back pocket. I'm just put on the spot right now. I'm sorry.
It's okay. What made you realize life coaching was the route you needed to take over therapy? Because before you answer that, I want to give like background to the audience of Julie and I met at an in-person boundaries workshop that I was doing. And I gave an example of a boundary and she raised her hand. She's like, I can relate to that. And it just started the conversation going. And she realized, she was like, oh, I think I need life coaching and not therapy. And this is a common reaction to a lot of people where they realize therapy isn't, like, therapy is so beneficial. I want to say that first. I just started therapy, honestly, so I know how beneficial it is. But sometimes therapy can only take you so far. So what was your kind of light bulb moment that you were, I need life coaching and not therapy right now?
Yeah. So full disclosure, I kind of thought life coaching was like bull crap before I met you, Jess. And now I'm like the biggest believer in it ever. I'm also a huge believer in therapy. I love therapy. I tell all my friends, please go to therapy. I just think it's really good to kind of like know the things that have helped define you and to really dig deep into, like, you know, family dynamic or whether when you're grieving, oh my gosh, therapy is so important. It is so beneficial. So don't think that I'm anti-therapy, because I did therapy since I was probably like 22 or 23 years old. I started and I'm 30 now. And I was in therapy for probably like 7 years, not always consistently. It's not like I was going once a week. Like sometimes I would go once a week for like, you know, 3 months and then I'd take a little break and then something would creep back up and I'd say, okay, you know, it's time to get back in it. And I also moved cities a lot. So I think it was kind of hard because finding a therapist can be tricky and you have to pay for those sessions. Even when you're just kind of like getting to know your potential future therapist, that's still an out-of-pocket cost to you. And so when you're shopping around for a therapist, it can get pretty pricey. So like I said, I moved cities a lot. I just kind of felt like I was retelling my story to a different person every single time. And I'd already worked through so much of it. And the last two therapists that I had, I just like wasn't walking out of their office being like, wow, like that was really great. I would walk out and be like, ugh, I just wasted money and an hour. And I'm not like knocking them. I'm sure they were great for other people, but it was just kind of like two in a row that I was like, what more can I learn from this? Like, I felt like I had already dug deep into my family stuff and I dug deep into my Mac stuff and like my marriage. And also, by the way, Mac and I did go to some counseling before we got married. There wasn't anything wrong. It was just like, again, like these are things that really bother me about him. And he would say like, yeah, when we like fight, like it's usually about this. And there's healthy fighting and there's unhealthy fighting. But that counseling was like so life-changing for us. And it was, I feel like just honestly preventative for, oh gosh, it was so awesome. And like sometimes, and that was Mac's first experience with therapy. And all in all, I've had fantastic experience with therapy. But my last two, I just kind of would walk out of there thinking like I could have gained a lot more. And so then I was kind of, you know, looking or whatever. And then I met you. And after our like consultation call, and I was in a huge period of transition. Like we had just moved to Charlotte. I had just started a new career. We had just bought a house. There were so many brand new things in my life. And I knew that. I knew that that was a lot. And I knew that I needed to be giving myself grace. And I felt like that's what the therapist would have told me is like, go easy on yourself. But like, how long, you know, I want to get out of this feeling that I'm totally out of control and this feeling like I want to get back on the horse so that I can be happy again. And I think that's exactly what you gave me is you gave me those action steps to feel like myself again, even during this huge time of transition.
Yeah. Yeah. Because coaching is more action-based and therapy is more talk through. And coaching does have like some talk through moments, but always at the end of every session is like, these are your actions based on what you just told me or based on what you said your goals were in session one, just to move you along the journey that I take my clients through, as well as through your own personal journey of what you're trying to accomplish, as well as what you're going through in that actual moment. Because I tell people, like, the difference, but the biggest difference I can describe for coaching versus therapy is therapy takes you from your past to your present, and coaching takes you from your present to your future. So the overlap is what's going on right now. But if you haven't dealt with the reoccurring patterns from your past, like your deep-rooted history, like versus like 6 months in the past kind of thing, then you need therapy. If it's more recent, if it's not some deep-seated commonality that keeps resurfacing, but is more so, I don't really like what's going on right now, or I see I have more potential to offer to my life or to the lives of others, then you and I get to have that conversation. So it's just nice to hear someone who isn't me talk about why they made the change, this little switch, well, big switch from therapy to coaching, because they are both helpful depending on what your needs are.
Well, and I think that's probably also why we worked so well together, because I had that knowledge, like I had that self-awareness, that background. I was able to speak to that to you to say like, hey, this is why I'm like, you didn't have to pull that out of me. I told you that day one, here's my history. Oh, da 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 da. And then we were able to kind of make those action steps. And when I'd fall back and I would have, you know, some anxiety or whatever, another great thing about you and life coaching is I didn't have to wait a full week to tell you about it. I feel like with therapy, like, you know, you have an hour with them and you get all that you can out in an hour and they give you all that they can in an hour. But with you, if something happened in the middle of the week, or if I was like feeling really anxious about, you know, a weekend plan that I had, like I could just call you up or text you, or actually I sent you a lot of voice notes, and like you'd pick up the phone and we'd talk through it together. So that to me, I mean, I think a lot of people say, oh, well, like life coaching is too expensive for me. Well, when you actually like look at the results that you get, number one, and number two, like I hope I didn't like abuse your time, but like I didn't hide away from the fact that you said that you were available to me. Obviously not in like the middle of the night, but like during the normal work day, I made those calls when I needed you, and I did not hide away, and I did not hold on to stuff till our next session the next week. Number one, because I didn't have to, and that's part of, you know, the payment plan. But number two, because I knew that we had stuff to get done in that next session that was then going to propel me so far forward. And we didn't have time to go through why I felt sad last week or why I felt anxious last week. We just didn't have time. Like we were moving forward, and it was just like, it was such a fast movement for me. It was really, really awesome.
And I set good boundaries of if I'm sleeping or if I'm taking a nap, like my phone's always on do not disturb, but I do check it regularly enough that I will answer. And I tell all my clients, I'm like, use me for it. I tell you I'm here. This isn't out of like courtesy of like, yeah, you know, maybe you can and I might answer. It's like, no, use me. I will answer. I am here for you 24/7 during our entire coaching partnership. And that is not something I take lightly. Like I will stop. I'll make sure I'm at a place where I can stop what I'm doing and give my undivided attention to answering your message. Or I'll say, I can't answer this right now. Like give me 30 minutes or something, or give me an hour, give me 2 hours. Like I will get to it. So, you know, I'm here. I have your back, but I also do have other clients and I have other things going on in my life, and not everything gets put on hold on like the absolute second, but sometimes it was very, you honestly got very lucky. A lot of times you called me, I was in a place where I could answer right away and I could talk to you. I could coach you through whatever was coming up. But it's one of the valuable things that I offer when you work with me, because it's not a cheap thing. It's an investment, but it's an investment in progressing your results and your growth so much faster than if you were to do this by yourself.
Totally agree.
Okay, let's go back on topic to marriage, because I want to talk about modern day marriage. So like the difference between being married in today's world versus maybe the way we grew up or the way we viewed marriage as a kid, or even how we saw our grandparents being married. So anything, I want you to just describe your differences or the comparisons you see or feel, and any other topics you want to add to that.
Nowadays, I'm a millennial. I don't know what you are. Maybe Gen Z, maybe millennial. I don't know.
I'm a confused person.
Okay, perfect. So now let's say 20 somethings. It's just so expected for women to work and for like both parties to bring in the income. And in my opinion, that is fantastic, because if women want to work, then they should work. And if they don't want to work, then they better be able to financially figure out how they're not going to do that. Unfortunately, you know, with inflation and everything, it's so common that both partners, whether it doesn't even matter, women, man, but double income. You pretty much, to survive in this economy and in our society, you need a double income. We're not even talking about like affording to buy a house, which is normally what I work with. We're talking about like to afford rent, you know, to afford to live, to afford groceries. You pretty much need double income. So I think what's really tricky is nowadays, sometimes when you do have one partner who is the breadwinner, there's a lot of shame in one partner not working. If it's the man, it's like a pride, ego thing. If it's the woman, it's like, wow, like all these women who came before me, like fought so many women's rights, everything. And the feminism, I am full-fledged feminist, okay? But have we taken it too far? And do we want both parties to be like killing themselves at work to have this? Is it all about like work status and title and everything? But I think, you know, when I was coming up, it was like, what is it? Boss girl. Like everyone wanted to be a boss girl, boss lady, everything. And if you weren't, you were like less than. And like, if you didn't put your career totally first, or at least for me, I couldn't have thought of anything worse than like being a stay-at-home mom. And now it's like, what a privilege that is. And I think that a lot of people are still kind of like, oh, what do you mean? Like, she doesn't work? Okay, well, keeping a house together, raising kids, helping your partner, you know, supporting them emotionally, everything, that is also a full-time job. I will tell you that right now. And I'm not saying that folks who have that option, they're not lucky, because I do think that they are. And there's so many people out there that would kill to, you know, support their partner and support their family, like at home as the main gig. But I think we got used to both sides working so, so, so hard. And when that happens, I don't know how you have time for your family and for your marriage and for socializing and for exercising and for general wellness when both parties are just work, 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 work. I think, you know, in our grandparents' generation, usually the woman stayed home, took care of the kids, did the cooking. And in our parents' generation, like so many of them are divorced. So I'm hoping that our generation is going to work harder at marriages and not give up as easily, because they know, you know, the results of that split and what it can do to the family and what it can do to the kids. And so I don't know. It's a really hard question, but I think again, it's about how much you love your career and how much your partner loves their career. And if you both hate it, then maybe you need to have a conversation, because you're bringing that bad energy home into your house. If you both hate your jobs, I know a lot of people say work stays at work, but it can't. If it's that draining to you, I don't know how it could. So it's just a mindset change of like, how can we make more time for each other? Because at the end of the day, you made a vow that you would put your partner first. And your marriage, in my opinion, my marriage is the most important thing in my life. And yes, do I want to be happy in my career? Yes, I do. But if my marriage isn't good, then probably nothing else in my life is going to be good.
Yeah, something's got to give. That's anything in life at any moment. And I love that you're bringing this up, because you are pregnant with your first child, which is super exciting. And you are a kick-ass real estate agent. Mac is a full-time lawyer, and there is balance that has to come with it. There was balance with your first trimester of not feeling well and then also learning to not be so hard on yourself when you couldn't be the kick-ass real estate agent that you were like before you found out you were pregnant, before you started experiencing all the pregnancy symptoms. Like, with that in mind, how do you plan to balance a baby with your careers, with this give and take that has to come with the importance of family, the importance of your marriage? How have you guys talked about this conversation, or what do you plan to do once the baby comes? And any, really just any insight that your specific situation is planning on handling, like, well, not your situation, your specific marriage, your specific life is planning on handling a baby coming into the picture.
Well, I want to back up and I want to say, anyone who goes the daycare route, I don't think that they're putting their career before their family by any means. So many couples, like, they both work, they have to work to pay their bills. And I feel like very fortunate that I'm in a position where we were able to sit down and say, you know, what actually makes financial sense? The cost of childcare is so, so, so high. And when you like really think about, okay, how much money do I bring in? How much money does my partner bring in? If we were to pay for daycare, how much money would we be spending versus if you're in a career where you can work from home? And like, I know a couple that they both work from home and they like trade off every, you know, 30 minutes, like watching the kids. To me, that sounds miserable, but it works for them. And they probably save a ton of money. They have no childcare expenses. Are they insane by the end of the day? Probably. But, you know, that's how some people do it. And it works for them. And they're like, if we can just, you know, do this for a year and a half, then we're going to do it. And then hopefully things will be a lot smoother.
Well, how do you specifically plan on navigating this? Because it's not to say like your way is the right way and everyone else is a shit person because they don't want to put their they don't want to put their family first, but sometimes they can't. And you're in a position where you can. And you and I talked briefly about like what that's going to look like. Luckily, the people listening are not mostly like not people that have kids or are about to or are like currently pregnant for the most part, but it is in their future potentially, like they are going to have kids. So it's just nice to have this kind of information in the back of their mind of what is someone else doing that is a little bit ahead of them in life than where they're at right now.
Yeah. So I will say like 5 years ago or something, I was talking to someone and I was like, oh no, like I'll never be a stay-at-home mom. Like my kids would just like drive me insane. Like I want to work. Why would I ever give a career up to, you know, be home with my kids? And I still like, I mean, maybe when he's born, I'll feel differently. I'm sure like I probably sound so naive right now because I have not had the experience of having a child of my own, but I just was so anti staying at home. And now it's like, it's just like what makes logical and financial sense for your family. And you really, really have to think ahead and you have to like budget. And luckily I'm in a career that my schedule can be flexible. It's not like I have to be at a desk every day from 8 to 5, like a lot of people do. I'm in a career where a lot of times I work on the weekends and, you know, Mac, he doesn't work on the weekends. So will he be able to help with our children on the weekends when I'm out going and showing houses? Yes, he will. So I think, you know, there's so many different factors. There's flexibility. There's can you work from home, which thanks to COVID, a lot of people can. But then you have to get in your head, okay, well, is working from home with a screaming baby, am I going to be able to get anything done? Some people say yes. Some people say absolutely not. There's no way I could work from home with a screaming child that needs a lot of attention. So it just depends. One thing that pregnancy has taught me is that like, you can't stress about things because it's not healthy for you and it's not healthy for the baby. So while, yeah, we have some loose plans, we're just going to see what happens. I'll have to come back and tell you on the next podcast what we end up doing. But as for right now, we're not going to do daycare. It's just too expensive for someone like me who just, I don't make enough money to justify the cost of daycare. It doesn't make sense to go that route. And as someone with a flexible schedule, you know, I hopefully will have clients that are kind and can say, yeah, I can go see this house at like 11 a.m. or, you know, 6 p.m. And that way, like Matt can be home to take care of the kids, or I'll like hire a babysitter or something like that. But I think it's just like really about what works for you and your family. And you do need to take into consideration like careers and finances and, you know, how much do you really love your career? And like, if it's not that much, maybe there's a more flexible option out there and you can explore that. But nothing is set in stone. And even once it does get set in stone, things can always change.
Oh, yeah. Life is very unexpected in the worst and best ways possible. But I have one final question for you, kind of the way I like to end any guest episode. And it's really to give you the floor. If there's anything else you want to say to the listeners who are maybe about to get married or very recently married, who are thinking about kids, just any message, any golden nugget, any piece of advice for them, the floor is yours.
Oh, this is hard. I think, like, first of all, it's 100% work. It's not like what you see in the movies. Nothing ever is. It's beautiful. Like, it's so beautiful. It's this built-in best friend. It's the most complex relationship that, you know, you'll ever have. And I think, like, if you treat your significant other, your spouse, your partner, whatever you want to call them, like you would treat a best friend, then it's gonna stay fun. And for me, when it stops being fun, I don't want it anymore. So what do we do to keep it fun? And maybe that's going on a date. Maybe that's literally just like laying outside in the backyard. Maybe it's just like, I don't know, spending little nuggets of time together, not in front of the television, is so, so, so important. I was actually listening to something the other day and it said time in front of the television is the least intimate form of connection that you can have. And I can't stand watching television with my partner. I just think it's like a waste of time. Like, we could be doing it in separate rooms and it would be the same thing. So just keep feeding your marriage as much as you possibly can. But when you feed your marriage, make sure that it's something that you enjoy as well. Like, don't just do things that you think that the other person will like, because if you're miserable feeding the marriage just to feed it, then it's going to build resentment and you're going to be like, well, I did this and you haven't done this. Actually enjoy trying to make them happy, if that makes sense. And yeah, I don't know. I'm here for you. If you ever want to chat, maybe Jess can put my stuff like in the notes or something, leave my phone number, leave my Insta, whatever. I love talking about marriage. It's one of my favorite things. And it's just like, we're all from different backgrounds. We're all complex creatures and there's no guidebook. Like, we're, again, just like adulting, we're all flying by the seat of our pants. And I think just having that appreciation and telling your partner how much you appreciate them and being loyal to them is, I don't know, it's just, that's what I'm trying to work on, being loyal AF to my partner. Like, if Mac is doing something that I don't like, I'm not telling anyone except Mac, and I'm not complaining about him. If you have a therapist or a life coach, you can tell them, but I'm not telling any of our friends. I'm not airing our dirty laundry. Like, he's the best. And I'm going to talk about his great qualities because I would want him to do the same for me.
Yeah, exactly. I tell people that all the time. I was like, do not talk to your best friend about, like, if you're in the middle of a fight with your husband or just your partner in general, do not talk to your mom about it. Like, talk to someone who is that, like, neutral ground that's not going to have this, like, tainted taste in their mouth based on what, even, like, you're not, that's not your intent. You're going into it with just to vent or to get some advice, but that's where coming to a coach or a therapist is a lot more helpful than to someone that is going to be around your partner a lot at a lot of different family events. But I want to thank you for that golden nugget piece of advice and for coming on How To 20-something to discuss married life. I think you said you love talking about married life because you and Mac both have cultivated this loving marriage together. And that's why it's something that makes you happy to talk about.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I do love talking about it. And I do feel like, you know, we're in a great place. And life is a roller coaster and marriage can be a roller coaster too. You'll have a good month, you'll have a bad month. That doesn't mean it's over. And you can always get back on the up and up anytime. It just takes a little bit of extra effort. So thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure just chatting with you and talking with you. And I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah. And Don't worry, guys, to you listening. Like I said earlier, and as Julia just said, like, she will be back. I'm going to be bringing her on in the future to talk about real estate and buying your first home and what that looks like, what that process is. But for now, if you want the best real estate agent in the Carolinas, you can head to the show notes and contact her directly. If you want to ask her questions about how she's handled certain things in her marriage, also in the show notes, you can contact her. But otherwise, this concludes another episode of How To 20-something. If you liked what you heard, please share it with a friend, share it with your partner, post it on social media, and tag me at coach.justdiamond when you do. And I will be in your headphones again next week with another episode of How To 20-something.